You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Today, as we're still shut down from the coronavirus, I'm looking at the dynasty value of players on the Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. Now, to talk about the Indiana Pacers and one player in particular, that is Goga Badadze, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Pacers podcast, Tony East, is here with me. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man. Excited to talk about Goga.
Now, when the NBA draft was on, I was very, very surprised that Goga slipped as far as he did. I thought he should have been a top 10 pick, and he kept sliding and kept sliding. Then he went to a team who already had two established centers in Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner. So we really haven't got to see all that much of Badadze this season for Indiana. What were your thoughts of him pre-draft, and have they changed at all since seeing him for these last 5 months of the NBA season?
Yeah, I really didn't scout centers a ton when looking at guys the Pacers might draft for the reasons you laid out, right? It didn't seem like, given they had Turner and Sabonis, that they would even consider a center. So I watched tape after the draft of him, but I was pretty impressed. You know, Europe's pretty fast-paced, but he did a good job keeping up with some guards. His offense was pretty polished, especially his decision-making. In the NBA, that was not quite as much there. I think he said many times the speed of the game. I mean, this is the classic rookie answer, right? But
yeah,
he said, you know, catching up with the speed of the game and all that stuff. And there were some times, and this is also a common rookie thing, he was just not strong enough. And he has to make, you know, making the reads a little faster and being strong enough will help him a lot. And I think some of his high IQ basketball style did translate from Europe. You know, he does recognize what's going on around him. He just doesn't have the strength and isn't quite reading the game fast enough to fully bring over his European skills just yet.
So we've seen him play in a number of games, 49 games, but only 8 minutes a night there. Nothing has really stood out massively. He's blocked shots at a pretty good rate, but the three-point shooting hasn't come across. He's at 17% on the season. He shot 40% in Europe last year. What have you made of that? Because it's really going to be the key thing for him, I think. I think the defensive stuff is there. I think the rebounding is going to be fine, but can he be that guy who can hit some shots? Now, in his 6 G League games, he's knocked him down to almost 2 a game at 36%, which is more in line with what he did in Europe. Have you seen, how do you believe in that that long-range shot from Badadze?
Well, I believed in him as a shooter, which is part of why it made sense. Like, even as a third center, it makes sense to draft a guy who can defend and hit threes. Yeah, you're right. It looked horrible in the game, 6 for 36. But, he got up a lot per 36 minutes, especially for a center over 3. For 36 minutes, and he was pretty good at like popping out to his spots, getting where he wanted to be, being ready to shoot. He very rarely had a three where he like really thought about it, or they like really gave him a ton of space and he just sat there forever and then finally took it and missed it. It was like within the rhythm of the play. This was the design. He took it. So I think he still has a chance to become a good shooter, right? 36 attempts isn't very many to evaluate a guy. TJ Leaf did the opposite. He fluked us into thinking he was a good shooter with a hot rookie season. So I think it's too early to pump the brakes and say, you know, okay, his three's not translating, especially because, like you said, in those games at Fort Wayne when he did play big minutes and get up a ton of looks there, you know, he took over 5 a game, I think. He made a reasonably good amount of them, enough that you would say, yeah, that's a guy you'd want to shoot him. So I think it's way too early to count out his three-point shooting, but it was not there this year.
We can look at small sample for G League as well, because he was 11 of 31 there, 6 of 36, but you put those together, you're like low 30s in terms of shooting, which is not great, but it's not terrible, but there is at least that some ability to be encouraged to take the shot, which I think is going to come from him. But I think the concern I have a little bit there as well is that he's not a good free throw shooter. He was 68% in Europe. He's at 67% in the G League. He's 72 in the NBA, but again, that's really, really small actual volume of free throw attempts. He's attempted 0.7 per game through those games. But let's talk about where he can sort of fit on this team future role. Because, of course, there is Miles Turner. There is Domantas Sabonis. Now, there was conjecture in the offseason. Would they trade Sabonis? He wasn't happy with his contract deal. He's come in. He's an all-star. He's outplayed Turner, who has struggled at times this season, although just before the hiatus, he started to come on. Is that Turner-Sabonis pairing a long-term thing for Indiana? Could Badadze be being groomed to jump in there in 2 to 3 years? Like, where is he fitting in this whole mix of big men?
Well, it would have kind of, depending on if the season resumes, we might find out sooner rather than later, right? Because my thought has always been, you know, last year they had the two centers, but they didn't play together very often. In the playoffs, they barely played together. This year, they're starting together. If they get to the postseason and Turner Sabonis is just terrible, I mean, then, yeah, you cannot go forward with that. You just signed a bunch of guys this summer. You're trying to keep Oladipo long-term. You have to go for it next year. I think they would have moved one, and then Batadze immediately slides up to the backup center, right? They were even, I think, December, January-ish, they made, I don't know if this was like a concerted effort or just a little bit of an internal discussion change, but Goga started to play basically every first, like he would get a stint every first half or almost every first half for a really long time there. And then he wouldn't play in the second half. So he'd only get like 5 to 10 minutes, but he was playing all the time. Whereas there was a stretch before that where it was a lot less frequent or just garbage time. So I think they're trying to develop him quickly and get him along. Now, if they don't have the playoffs this year, right, because of the pandemic, and then they would probably run it back with Sabonis and Turner, I'm sure, and see how it could work with the team at full, well, closer to full strength, no Jeremy Lamb, but closer to full strength next year and evaluate from there. But Goga is either going to slide up to the backup center when they do decide what they want to do with the Sabonis-Turner pairing, or he'll be involved in the big move the Pacers make to try to maximize that pairing and make the team as good as possible. It's not really clear what direction that is yet. I think, you know, like I just said, I think it would have required a postseason to figure out what direction they were going with that. That's just how I'm reading the situation. But, it's kind of weird because when they were both hurt early in the season and he got a few starts, he played okay. He had a double-double. Yeah. He never really killed them. But then he had some moments more recently where he looked kind of lost. So he had a nice up-and-down season, so it's kind of hard to read what they would think of him and where they would go with that.
That stretch you're referencing at the beginning of the season, he had 3 games in a row where he played 25, 19, and 32 minutes, started 2 of them, and blocked 4 shots in each of those 3 games. So that's really where his fantasy strength is going to come. Now, last question, Tony, before I let you go. Can he play with Sabonis? Can he play with Turner? Which one would he play better with? Or would he need to be that only center on there with an actual power forward next to him to be at his best?
Well, I think something we talked about earlier will determine that answer. If that 3 is not real, right, if 6 for 36 is more indicative of his outside shot, he would be a horrible fit with Sabonis. I mean, they're both high IQ guys who can pass. It's not going to be, like, impossible to have them both out there, but neither of them are quick enough to, you know, make up for defending a 4. Sabonis is having trouble with that this year as he's doing it full-time. I think that would be really challenging if they both can't shoot spacing-wise. I mean, Goga gets caught in some bad spacing bench groups now, even when he is the lone center. If he can shoot, he'd be an okay fit with Sabonis. They're both, again, I just like, they're both pretty high IQ guys. So I think, you know, you could even use Sabonis as his blueprint of growth from lost to, I mean, Sabonis is like almost a savant big man passer this year. So Goga could get up to that point. Now, Turner, like, because Turner can shoot, he can fit with really any big decently, and because he's an amazing defender, right? But Goga can't defend away from the rim yet. At least we haven't seen it. His pick and roll coverage has been abysmal. He gets caught in no man's land all the time. So he's going to have to improve in some key areas if he wants to fit with either guy, because right now it seems like his best role would be kind of like Miles, where he'd be a lone center who's pretty good at coming over from the weak side and blocking shots and can occasionally corral guards if need be and shoot threes, but never really in the Sabonis role. So it seems like he'd be better as a 5 alongside no other centers.
Yeah, that's sort of how I see it as well, which means, you know, in order for him to have that role with Indiana, that, you know, 2 moves would have to be undertaken, or he would need to go to another team to really realize his potential. But Tony, thank you for coming on and chatting with me in these trying times about Badadze and his future in the NBA. And Tony will be running Locked On Pacers over this hiatus, so any Pacers info you want to get, go and download that. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it.
Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. You can play classic casino games, blackjack, roulette, slots, video poker over there as well. But if your favorite squad is sidelined due to the pandemic, don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid. All right, let's go on to the next player now. Actually, so just quickly touching on Goga, I do think that he can be a top 100 player. A little bit like Yusuf Nurkic, with some passing ability, shot blocking ability, and will be able to bang in some threes as well. So maybe he can top out as a top 50 guy. I don't think he'll ever be a 32, 33 minute center like Nikola Jokic, like Joel Embiid, like Karl Anthony Towns. I don't think he'll be one of those guys, but maybe a 28, 29 minute a night guy that can still be that top 70, maybe top 50 sort of a player. Let's look at Aaron Holiday, who I thought there was a decent chance before Brogdon signed here that he could be their starting point guard, and then he'd be their backup point guard. And he did begin the season as the backup. He quickly lost that role, though, because he struggled immensely. We saw TJ McConnell move in, and it was only when Brogdon suffered the first of his 17,000 injuries that we saw Holiday jump back in. And he did play all right to begin the year, but he's had numerous struggles, and the last portion, the last month or so of his year, has been pretty disappointing for Aaron Holiday. He's playing 24 minutes a night. He's averaging 9 points with 2 rebounds and 3 assists, but shooting just 41% from the field. He is still shooting well from three, 39%, and that was really his calling card in college as well, to be that 40% three-point shooter. He shot 34% last season, so he's jumped that up to that sort of level that we expect. Great free throw shooting, but I think the thing we look at there is that the lack of assists, they're not great, only 5 per 36. Yes, Brogdon and Oladipo and Jeremy Lamb and Sabonis are handling the ball, and that does impact him. Now, overall, I think that we look at the plus minus from Holiday, it's pretty strong. He's a plus 2.4, which is better than someone like Jeremy Lamb, and he's filled in at both the 2 and the 1 this season. But it still doesn't, it's not a great number. It's better than his brother's. It's better than Malcolm Brogdon's, but it's not a number where it stands out and I go, man, that's unbelievable from Aaron Holiday. His PIPM is okay. He still has some defensive issues. I think he's still tracking on an okay level. I worry about Brogdon's future in the NBA, not his future in the NBA as an NBA player getting contracts, but can you ever rely upon him to be a consistent starting point guard? The fact that he's continually getting hurt. He started out this season great. He played great for the Bucks last year, but consistent injuries from Brogdon, like, is that going to wear him down quickly? Brogdon's already 27, so you know, do we? When he gets to age 30 and he's continually breaking down and playing 50 games a season, then is that in 3 years' time, Holiday at the end of his rookie contract, are they looking to move Brogdon into a backup role and Holiday to start? I think there's a distinct possibility in that. So despite the fact that Holiday hasn't really grasped his opportunity and has really only got the increase in minutes because of the Lamb injuries and the Brogdon minutes, otherwise he would have been out of the rotation. That does at least give you some hope, I think, that Holiday can step up in the future. It's a few years away, definitely, but I do think he can be a 15-point per game guy at his best, 2.5 threes, maybe 5 to 6 assists on pretty strong free throws. And if he can get to the line, that's a huge, huge thing. I'm not massively confident in him, but I reckon he's probably got one top 100 season in him at a bare minimum, Aaron Holiday. Let's look at the next guy, and that is Edmund Sumner, a player whose rookie season was basically ruined due to a knee injury. He's still sort of struggling to get back, but I think he's shown little flashes when he's out there. Now, again, he's in that mix where Lamb and Brogdon and Oladipo and Holiday are all ahead of him. But when he gets pushed into a role, we see some okay things. Now, his PIPM has been absolutely rough as ass this season, negative 2.28 in his 350 minutes. That is not a good number. His on-off is horrible. And let's be fair, I am a fan of Goga Badadze. His on-off is horrible as well, negative 6.3. And a large part of that is because Sabonis is so good and those two didn't really share the floor all that much. But Sumner, negative 6.1 is the second worst number on the team behind Badadze. Even TJ Leaf has a better plus minus than that. So what is Sumner doing? His ability to get steals is something that can separate him. He's averaging 1.6 per 36. He was at 2.1 last season per 36. But we need to see the shooting. 26% from three each of the last two seasons. It's gotten worse over the last 10 games, down to 19%. He can't hit free throws either. That is a massive, massive concern. His true shooting percentage has improved. It's improved to 49%. So that is obviously not a good number. I don't think Sumner is ever going to be a starting caliber player. I don't think he's ever going to be really anyone who we should look at as a top 200 sort of a fantasy guy. Maybe if he found himself into 30 minutes a night, which I don't really see how that's happening. If he was able to get to that level, he could crack the top 150, top 160 maybe. But to me, he profiles as best an eighth man. TJ Leaf is probably worse than that somehow. As Tony alluded to, he shot 40% from three as a rookie, and ever since then, it has been really rough. Offensively, a disaster. A negative 8.5 on-off on offense is not a good number at all. And for a guy who, as a big man, he's considered an offensive-only big man, his POPM's negative. Now, weirdly enough, his defensive numbers have come all right in terms of those advanced stats, but still, can't block shots at all. 0.6 blocks per 36 as a bloke playing as a power forward and center is abysmal. He's shooting only 58% from the line and never had a season shooting over 63% from the line. He's at least normalized his three-point shooting back to 36%, where it was 40% as a rookie. And then it went down to 25% last season. So where does he sit? It is really hard to get a full judge on that with Leaf, but I don't really see him as someone who is going to stick in the NBA long-term at all. And I don't think we should be placing too much value on him as a dynasty type of player. The next guy is a player who has a lot of intrigue to me. I don't know if many people would really be on board with that, but Elise Johnson is a player who's been around for a couple of seasons now. We don't really see him much in the NBA, just 4 minutes a game, but if you look at what he's done in the G League, he's put up some big numbers. Now, he is that guy in terms of his POPM. It's hard to get a full judge on that just because of the limited sample size, but I think he can be like a relatively neutral type of a player in terms of advanced stuff, offensively, defensively. But we look at what he's done in the G League. He's played 19 games this season, 20 points, 13 rebounds, over 4 assists and 1.4 steals, shooting 57 from the field, and over his 2 years in the G League, 36% from three on over 3 attempts per game. Like, they are really, really good numbers. Can he ever become a good NBA player? I don't know. I have my concerns about that. He is sort of an undersized-ish power forward. Like, he's not the biggest. I think he's about 6'9". As a power forward, I don't think he can really ever play center. But he hasn't turned 24 yet. He's a year older than TJ Leaf. So he's not completely old. I would much rather he be playing these minutes than someone like Jakar Sampson. But if I had to pick between Elise Johnson or Leaf as a future Kenneth Faried-ish type, Kenneth Faried on the Rockets maybe, or on the Nets, backup center that play, or power forward that plays eight. There's a lot of big men on this team, obviously, so they need to clear it out and thin some ranks. Give him 18, 19 minutes. He could crack the top 200. I think there's enough there with some shooting ability, with some rebound, really strong rebounding ability, and the ability to turn it on usage-wise, which is never really going to come in the NBA, but it's at least handy to have that ability there. He is someone to look at. The last two guys, the Pacers really aren't blessed with much in terms of long-term prospects. Brian Bowen, a two-way guy who was undrafted, played down in Australia last season. We haven't really seen any of him this year. Only 5 games with the main club so far this season, which is obviously very, very little to be able to get any sort of indication. 6 minutes per game during that time. So not really a huge amount happening there. Bowen is a 6'6 shooting guard. Now, in his 29 games for Fort Wayne, he's averaged 16 points with 8 boards. And when I saw him at Summer League, he was pretty good with the defensive stuff, with the rebounding. And that's carried across here. Almost a block a game, 8 rebounds, 1 steal. He shot 34% from 3 on decent volume. He shot 88% from the line, which is encouraging. His win shares and box plus minus stuff is relatively encouraging. 60% true shooting, but only 16% usage in the G League is a little bit concerning with Bowen. just because you'd like these guys to be able to take on a larger scoring load down there. I do think that there is a chance that he can leapfrog guys like Edmund Sumner, maybe leapfrog someone like a Justin Holliday, who's going to age out eventually. We're about 3 or 4 years away from that happening, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him having a weird little cameo season where he puts up a top 150 season. I have a little bit more faith in him doing it than I do with Sumner doing it. Or with the next guy we're going to talk about, Naz Long, who has encouraged me at times, but not someone I'm massively having huge hopes of. But Bowen at least has some interesting statistical abilities with those rebounding numbers and with that shot blocking coming from a guard. There's a little bit to see there with what he's done. His on-off stuff, again, in limited minutes, plus 11.6 is encouraging, but of course that doesn't mean everything. But there is some good future projection stuff from Bowen that we can have a look at, and the three-point shooting and three-point volume is something at least for us to pay some attention to. The next guy we take a look at, or the last Indiana Pacers we talk about, is Naz Mitru-Long, a point guard, 6'3", who played he played for Indiana, for Utah before this season. And then we haven't really seen him play in Indiana much this year at all. Long has played just the 3 games. He's averaged 5 points in 14 minutes, but again, it's hard to get a full read of what he's done during that time just because it is such a low sample size. But the second Naz in the NBA, let's have a look at what he's done in the G League. Now, his first 2 years with Salt Lake were really strong, averaged 18 points per game with 5 assists. The scoring is way down this season. He's only played 15 games for the Pacers G League team, 13-6 with a steal, but 33% from three, very similar to what it was last season, 80% from the line. He should be a better three-point shooter, but he was, in his first year with Salt Lake, an absolute bomber. 3.5 threes per game on 9 attempts at 38%, and that has fallen off considerably over the next two seasons. So that's a little bit of a concern, I think, for Long. He is also about to turn 27 in a couple of months' time. So while some of his numbers look okay, I'm not really sure how confident we should be. Again, with Aaron Holiday in that mix there, I think Long is a long way down, and he'd have to be in a pretty deep league to consider him as really any sort of an option, unfortunately for him and his immediate family. Let's have a look now at the next team. We're going to flip it over and we're going to start talking Milwaukee Bucks, the best team in the NBA. They don't have a huge amount of long-term prospects either. That's what happens when you're one of the best teams in the NBA. You're sort of selling out to win now. But there is one player we're going to talk about, and I'm going to talk about him with the host of Locked On Bucks a little bit later, Kane Pittman. We're going to talk about the big ragu, Dante DiVincenzo, who you will all know I am extremely turgid when I think about what he can do in the future. The rest of this team, though, there are some players for us to talk about in terms of their dynasty capabilities. You want me to talk about Giannis? Yeah, look, you punt free throws, he's going to be in the top three for the next 10 years, like 7 years at least. I don't think we need to talk too much about those guys. Yeah, Middleton, probably got another 2 years at this level. Lopez, probably got another 1 year at this level. Bledsoe, probably another 1 to 2, I would say, at this level. Matthews is cooked. But let's talk about some of these other young guys that we can take a look at here. We'll get to Dante soon. Let's talk about Sterling Brown, who we really haven't seen very much of this season at all. Only 45 games, but under 15 minutes. The shooting has been rough. He's averaging only 5 points per game this season, Sterling. A really rough PIPM, negative 1.44 as well. A bad on-off at negative 5.4. And some of the bench numbers of the Bucks guys in on-off is rough. Say, for example, DJ Wilson's a negative 17.2. Robin Lopez a negative 7.5. Connaughton 6.6. Because that core group of Giannis, Middleton, Lopez, Matthews, Bledsoe, DiVincenzo, and Hill are all such big positives that these other bench guys have just struggled in that role. Now, as for Sterling, in terms of per 36, is there anything that really stands out? He's been a really good rebounder, almost 9 boards per game this season, 2 threes per game, but he hasn't really been able to turn much on. Unfortunately, his three-point shooting has dropped off, and that was a pretty good strength of his last season. Now, we're obviously not at that level with him anymore, where it's dropped way off this season to be just shooting at 32%, down from 36 last season. I think that he's not going to succeed on this team. There is still a chance for Sterling Brown long term. He's 25 years of age, though, so that is fading pretty rapidly. I don't really ever think he's going to be someone that we look at as a top 200 player. But he does come in. He has these couple of flashes. We saw it this year. He had a nice double-double in a game against the Kings. He had... I don't think he started one game. That was that last game before the shutdown where the Bucks rested everyone. He had 16-6 with three triples, and that was, oh, well, that's pretty interesting. He had a 14-8 game against the Pacers in February as well, 11-6 in 24 minutes. So he's had a couple of games. The rebounding's been the real standout skill from Sterling Brown this season. Let's talk about DJ Wilson, who I thought came on pretty well last year, but has been completely marginalized with the arrival of Robin Lopez and then the arrival of Ersan Ilyasova and the arrival of Marvin Williams. We're just not seeing him at all. He's played 9 minutes a game across 31 games. That is not very much at all, as you'd well be aware. And he's sort of languishing. Now, last he was shit as a rookie. I thought he took a big step up as a second-year guy, and Budenholzer was really liking him, but that has fallen off. He's played 9 minutes a game, down from 18 minutes a game. His shooting, which was excellent, 36% from three last season, down to 26 this year. His block rate, which was not good to begin with, has fallen. His steal rate has fallen. His rebound rate has fallen. His free throws have actually improved up to 67%, but it has been pretty rough for DJ Wilson this season. Just given those other players around with the Bucks, it's just hard to see what his role is in the future. Now, of course, Marvin and Ersan and Brook and Robin, these guys aren't young. But is this Bucks team going to, you know, move on from those guys in the next 1 to 2 seasons to give Wilson a go? I'm not sure. And then when their title window closes, is Wilson the guy that they're going to look to build around? Again, I think that's pretty highly doubtful. He's played 5 games for the Wisconsin Herd this season. He's averaged 19-9 with 3 assists and 2 blocks and has shot 38%. In fact, over his 22 career G League games, very small sample, he's a 38% three-point shooter, hitting 2 threes a game. That's big volume and it's big percentages in 30 minutes a game. He's been really good. So I'm not completely writing DJ Wilson off. I think he needs a different environment to go to. But on another team, playing some small ball center, playing some power forward, there could be something there if he can get the shot blocking and three-point shooting to go. But again, comparing him to someone like TJ Leaf, Wilson's clearly ahead of him. Comparing him to someone like Goga Badadze, I would have Goga over him pretty comfortably. Antetokounmpo is on this list. That is not Giannis. That is his brother, Thanasis Antetokounmpo. I don't even know why I included him. Maybe because there's just so few young guys on this squad. Thanasis is going to turn 28, so he's not even really that young. In fact, he's 2 years older than Giannis. Just needed to make sure that you guys know that Thanasis is not a long-term prospect and not someone that we really need to pay too much attention to. Cam Reynolds. On the list here, a guy that we haven't really seen play for them. I don't think he's even played for Milwaukee at all this season. He had some moments last season for the Wolves. I thought he looked okay during that time. But again, just another one of these wing players who is not really doing a huge amount. He has played 31 games and started them all of those games for Wisconsin, but only 14 points per game, shooting just 67 from the line, 34 from three. Steals and blocks and assists and rebounds are low. Pretty low numbers from him. His advanced stuff is rough as well for Wisconsin. I don't really see Cam Reynolds as any sort of long-term prospect. And then the last guy we want to talk about is Frank Mason, who we've only seen 6 minutes, almost 50 minutes total for him this season, which of course is not very good. But he has had some moments in the past when he played for Sacramento that I guess gave you at least an ability to go, well, I know who Frank Mason is, and there might be something there. I don't think there's something there with Mason, but again, we look at that last game that he played big minutes, 30 against the Nuggets, 9-4-5. The 5 assists are encouraging, but realistically, he's barely played at all this season. We just haven't seen really any Frank Mason with the big squad at all. But he has played in the G League. And a lot of the Bucks people I've been talking to or have been following on Twitter have talked about just how well he has played. And that's because in the G League, he's averaging 25 points per game. He's shooting 43% from three on over 7 attempts per game. He's giving us 5 assists and a steal per game. An absolute offensive powerhouse. Win shares up the wazoo. Huge numbers from Mason. Distributing, scoring, doing a lot. Now, the point guard situation on this team, George Hill's 34. Eric Bledsoe's over 30. There's no other real point guard on this team unless we're going to include Dante DiVincenzo in that group. So Mason, maybe we look at him, but he's 26. That's some great G League numbers. Can he be an Aaron Brooks-ish type guy that might have a season of 23 minutes a night and crack the top 150? Maybe. But overall, I think it's pretty rough in terms of looking at this squad. Outside of the bloke we're going to talk about in a second, the Big Ragu. Out of those guys, Brown and Wilson, Thanasis, Cam Reynolds, Frank Mason, I think that DJ Wilson has the brightest upside of those guys. It's still pretty dim, but there is at least some value in him as a shot-blocking, three-point shooting big man. But of course, Dante is the crown in the jewel of what the Bucks are going to do in terms of long-term prospects. All right, now let's bring in the host of the Locked On Bucks podcast. It is Kane Pittman. He is back here in Australia due to this coronavirus-induced shutdown of the NBA. Kane, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I didn't expect that we would both be in Australia so soon, but here we are.
Yes, here we are, and here we are ready to talk about the Big Ragu, the Delaware Jordan, Dante DiVincenzo of the Milwaukee Bucks. I've been pretty excited about what I've seen from DiVincenzo this season and frustrated at times at the way that Budenholzer has used him on this team. It's pretty clear to me that he is a better player than Wes Matthews, but he's still stuck in that 22, 23 minute a night role. So I'm going to start by asking you, Kane, something that I've been saying I think is going to happen next year. I am pretty sure that he'll be like a 30 minute a night starter from next season on. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, you might be right. And I think that the big thing to look at with the Bucks and their roster situation is what happens with a guy like Wes Matthews anyway in whenever free agency comes around. So I think that the biggest thing for the Bucks this year and the reason why Dante wasn't starting was Bud really liked using Wes Matthews as really the primary defender on the opposition's best wing. So I think, for the balance of the starting five, I think Bud liked it. But you're right. I mean, this has been a guy that even in his rookie season, although he got cut short with injuries and he only played 27 games, he was always one of the first guys off the bench. And you could tell right from the training camp, really, at the start of the 2018-19 season, that this guy was a favorite of Bud.
It was weird that at that start of his rookie season that he was playing such a large role. I thought, that's a bit strange. But then even weirder, at the start of this season, he wasn't in the rotation. He didn't play. He played 2 minutes in a blowout against the Cavs and then didn't play at all against the Celtics. But then it went back to business as usual, playing those 23, 24 minutes a night. He started a bunch of games this season as well. He started 22 games this year. The real strength from him fantasy-wise is his ability to get steals, but he can hit threes, he can score, he can pass a bit. He's averaging 3 assists per game as a starter. What do you think his position is? Is he a shooting guard? Can he handle combo guard type roles? We've got these guys like Matthews is 30 plus, Bledsoe's just turned 30. Can he be a starting point guard? Is he an off-ball guy? Look, where is he going to fit onto this team in the future?
Yeah, I think he's a two guard. I mean, he's got decent size defensively, but his biggest impact on the defensive end is his anticipation, his ability to get steals, to create deflections, really to just be all over the place. So, particularly in this system with the Bucks, outside of one-on-one defending, which is rarely the case. I mean, they work genuinely as a five-man unit, and he's sort of the free safety rolling around and gathering those loose balls. So, look, I think that next year I could certainly see the scenario where you envisage that the other four starters are going to come back for the Bucks, and DiVincenzo might be the guy that slides up. But it's funny you mentioned he wasn't in the rotation because if we remember the Bucks started 2-2, which is kind of hard to think back and imagine the fact that they were 2-2. But that was what sparked DiVincenzo to come into the rotation against Orlando, and he played really well. And as you said, he hasn't looked back since.
According to Jacob Goldstein's PIPM career projection model, in his peak seasons, which is about 3 or 4 years from now, he thinks there's almost a 40% chance of him being an all-star caliber player. Do you see that level of production coming from Dante? Like, where can he go? Can he eventually take on a Chris Middleton sort of role next to Giannis? And Middleton's going to be 29 in a couple of months' time. So 3 years' time, he'll be 32. That Dante pushes to be 25, 26. Can he be that second guy?
Maybe. I think that it's going to come down to his scoring ability because, let's be honest, all-stars often are selected on the offensive end, and he's been such a factor defensively. But the thing that you like to see for him is in his rookie season, like I said, only 27 games, but 26% from three on 3.1 attempts. This season, that was up to 34 percent on 3.7. But the other thing that I really liked was his finishing at the rim, because he was always a guy that could get to position, get to the rack, but he was a little rough around the edges when it came to actually finishing, and he missed a lot of easy opportunities that he got. But he's finishing at the rim, 54% in November, that went up to 63% in December, 67% in January. February was around the mid-60s, but in March it was up to 86%. Now, that's obviously not sustainable, but I think it was a good trajectory he was on with his finishing ability at the rim. And if he becomes a mid-60s, upper 60s guy finishing at the rim and improves to a 36, 37% shooter from three, then, I mean, I could see that he's a guy that's going to be in calculations, because he just does so much.
Now, his usage is pretty low. It's only at 17%. But, of course, that's because Middleton's taking those shots. That's because Bledsoe's taking those shots. But if he can evolve into that third guy and possibly second guy, then he goes to it. Like, he's not a guy where you go, there's no way I can see him handling 22% usage. Like, he can easily do that. Can he handle 23, 24? Maybe. Can he be an 18-point-per-game guy, 5 assists, 2 steals? Like, maybe he peaks out of that. I think there's legitimate evidence to show that he can get to that level. Now, whether he does and what the Bucks do in their situations, and I talked about this with other Bucks guys before, if Giannis ends up leaving, do they just scrap everything? There's possibilities there with all these older guys who are sort of tied into Giannis's free agency with Bledsoe, and like they're not going to last that much longer after that. Like, how does everything sort of pan out? Can he be a key piece? Can he be a best player on a team? Probably not. So there are a lot of ups and downs or unknowns with DiVincenzo, but what we've seen from him, that steal rate has been fantastic. The fact that he gets deflections at a high rate has been awesome as well. The three-point shooting, the finishing at the rim, all that stuff does push into me to make him look like a pretty key. He's already a key piece of this team. Has one of the best on-offs on the squad from memory. I should have that number in front of me. Plus 3.7 in the luck-adjusted on-off stuff, which is a pretty strong number. It's above Wes Matthews there, above George Hill, who's had a really strong season as well. So a key part of what they do, and I think the future is pretty bright for DiVincenzo. Kane, thanks for coming on and talking about him with me, and you're going to be having some Locked On Bucks content for us while we're all shut down and looking for things to do. So thanks for doing that, and thanks for coming on here with me. And that will do it for today's show. Don't forget, subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up. Leave a comment down below as well. And don't forget, after listening to this show, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen on the Locked On Podcast Network. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.